Welcome to the second ever episode of the West Ham Way USA podcast. I'm your co-host Tony in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. On the other side, we have Brawley in St. Louis. How's it going, man?
It's going good. I'm pleased with the point that we got yesterday, in all things considered. But yeah, I'm doing well. How are you?
Man, we're up early morning on this Sunday here. Just got done watching the Formula One. I know you're up early too, since you're an hour behind. It is 9 yeah. o'clock on Sunday, so bright and early for you.
Yeah, it's 8 o'clock here, and usually, to be fair, I'm up already at this time, so it's not that big of a deal. But different recording time because I have a fantasy hockey draft that I have to do tonight. So when we normally would be recording, I have a draft that I'm going to go do at a friend's house. So I'm going to draft all my Stanley Cup champion St. Louis Blues players. Got to make sure I mention that at least once a show. And yeah, so that's why we're recording earlier in the day.
Instead of the London Pride, I have an espresso this morning. Are you drinking coffee or are you drinking alcohol already?
Yeah, not drinking alcohol. I have to work today, so I am sipping on Folgers breakfast blend, whatever that is. It's pretty good, actually.
Exactly. However, I'm not sure people really want to talk about coffee. They want to talk about the game. So I don't think we have any extra podcast news before we get into it. Do you have anything you want to say? Give any shouts real quick?
I don't think so. I think we usually have covered all of that stuff, so I don't think there's anything that we have to add right now.
Nope. The only difference is, again, our Twitter is now different. It is West Ham Way USA Pod.
West Ham Way US Pod.
Yeah, West Ham Way US Pod. There we go. And it's the same account as our old podcast. It's same RSS feed, so you go to iTunes, just the name and picture changed. You don't have to go subscribe to anybody else, SoundCloud, Spotify, all that. But it's the same two guys on the same podcast. What you think?
Yep, I'm good with that. I'm excited to get going for another episode.
All right, here we go. So, the Bournemouth game. Before we get into any of the results, and I think we found a better format than we used to. When we did this before, it seems like we just ran through the highlights, and I felt like it was kind of boring and monotone. So we're just going to have a discussion on the game and then get into our QA section later, because that's really the fun part. That's the interactive with our fans. So the first part of the game is, let's just say, the lineup. I'm not going to go through it, but was there anything that stuck out to you with the lineup?
No, same team from Man United. I don't think Pellegrini changes a winning team very often, so everything stayed the same. And we haven't even talked about the cup defeat. Are we even going to get into that?
I don't even really want to talk about it, if I'm completely honest with you.
Well, let's
we can talk about it after. Let's talk about this game first, since we already started. Then we'll talk about that game later. I guess the main thing I wanted to say about the lineup, since, like you said, nothing was changed, the main outlier was Lanzini back in the lineup. That was a surprise, back into the substitute area.
Yeah, well, everyone was saying, I don't know where I saw that he was going to be out for up to a month and a half, but obviously that was not the case, and he was ready to go. And actually, when he came on later in the game, he made a big impact, so we'll get into that a little later, but I was surprised to see him and them declare him fit for the game.
I've really, really grown into this Diop-Ogbonna pair. I really have. I was surprised how well Ogbonna has been playing, and they seem to have finally got it together. I mean, before the Oxford game as well, we had, what, 4 clean sheets in a row. They were playing well, and I liked what our back line was doing, especially with Diop and Ogbonna.
And Fredericks, I would even throw into that. Cresswell had a good game too. So all around, I think the back four is playing really well. Even though they conceded 2 goals, the first goal was just pure blind luck that it came off of Ake's thigh right to them. So I chalked that up to just blind luck. And then the second goal, the back four fell asleep. So, I mean, that happens sometimes. You'd like to think that they wouldn't do that, but it does happen sometimes. But yeah, as a unit, I'm pleased with the way we're playing along the back line. And yeah, I'm just really pleased with the way we're playing as a whole. So starting back at the beginning of the game though, I just wanted to talk about Yarmolenko's goal and how brilliant of a goal that was.
Absolutely. Just
absolutely spectacular play. And the way I can't express this enough, the way Allaire brought that ball down, it made me very aroused to see that touch and the pull down.
One of the things that one of our comments for later on our Twitter Q&A was talking about Allaire's hold up play, and I completely agree. I think it's going really under the radar what he's providing to the game, different than Marko Arnautović.
Yeah, 100%. He's like Andy Carroll in his prime, but way better at doing other things too. It feels like he doesn't get talked about when he doesn't score. And I think that's really harsh on him, but everything he's doing, he's taking markers with him. He's bringing the ball down, he's controlling it, and he's laying it off for other people, which is something that Arnie never did. Arnie was always selfish. And don't get me wrong, he was a great forward. He scored goals for us, but Allaire can do it all. I mean, he can play that number 10 role and hold it up and dish it off, and then he can play as a 11 at the very top as a center forward and bring people into him and let them run off of him, which I don't know that I've ever seen as a striker at West Ham. So I feel like he's not getting the full credit he deserves, and he's been absolutely spectacular. Maybe not great for the fantasy team. Yeah. Although the assists are good, but I think he just flies right under that radar, which is probably a good thing, honestly, for the rest of the world and the rest of the league.
Well, he's doing the job he's supposed to do, and then if everyone else is scoring goals, he doesn't need to.
Yeah, right.
That's the point I want to make is, although we'd like to see him be the one banging them in, if no one else, I mean, if everybody else picks up the slack and he's the one who has to be distributor, then so be it. And from afar, you know, I've never met Sebastian Allaire, and I don't know him personally, but it seems from afar that he seems okay with being the guy who's the setup man. I mean, look how he played at Frankfurt with, Djokovic?
Jovic.
Yeah, I got my NBA mixed up here, the center from Denver Nuggets. But anyway, look how he played with them. I mean, Jovic, say it one more time for me.
Yeah, Jovic.
Jovic. Okay, so think about how Jovic was the main man and got the massive transfer to Real Madrid and all that. But Allaire went under the radar there, and here he is doing the same thing, setting up goals and doing a great job for us.
Yeah, it's just exciting to have a unselfish player, really. I think that's what I'm most – like, sometimes as a center forward, you have to be selfish, and that's what I always said about Arnie is like, well, you got to be selfish. Well, he's proving you don't absolutely have to be selfish 100% of the time.
Look, we almost have too many unselfish players. Look, at Fornals not – how many opportunities in the last two games now did we see Fornals have an opportunity to rip a shot? Like at the end of the Villa game, where I feel like there was a few times in the game against Bournemouth. Yeah, where he had opportunities.
Yeah, early in the game, he was very timid to shoot. But then later in the game, he did start to shoot more and more and more. He shot probably three or four times later in that game where I'm like, okay, I mean, that's good. And people need to just get off his back. I mean, I see everyone criticizing him right now on Twitter and just saying, wow, he's not really doing anything. It's like, he's young. We got to give him some more time. I actually think he played okay. I will concede to the fact that Lanzini was a little better when he came on, probably. But in my defense also, I didn't see a lot of the second half because I was at work. But go ahead.
No, absolutely. Lanzini was better in the second half, but that's okay. I mean, he was fresh off the legs playing against tired legs, so that could easily happen. I do want to note, though, the same dickheads who want to complain and say Fornals isn't cutting it and is not doing well enough is the same dickheads who want to complain at my little crack joke at Roberto on Twitter.
Yeah, well, Fabianski went off injured for those that, I don't know if you completely missed the game, but Fabianski, I mean, let's talk about that for a second.
Okay.
Let's get into the injury. So was it a goal kick?
I think it was on a goal kick. He definitely
like
pulled
Allison.
Up. Yeah.
Yeah, a lot like Allison's injury. Just probably, if I had to pick one player in the team that I did not want to get injured, it's probably Fabianski. Not probably, 100%. Fabianski is so vital to what we do, and he's an incredible goalkeeper. And I just think that losing him is not good for us. Now, go ahead.
Any person, when they saw Fabianski pull up, he kicked that goal kick. He went down, he got back up, and then went back down again. Any single person who did not say, "Oh shit, here comes Roberto," is lying. is lying. As simple as that. I mean, I get behind every player, even if I crack a joke. I will get behind any player that puts on the West Ham top. I will. Simple as. But any person who said, "Oh God," after that Oxford performance and some of his performances in the season, I'm not saying that he had to come off the bench looking fantastic, but he did not look good yet so far. He made some key saves at the end, which we'll get into, but he did not look good. And any person that said, "Oh shit," I mean, who was like excited for him to come on, is a liar.
When I saw Fabianski go down, it was literally as I was leaving for work. So I watched at home this week, by the way, people. The first 30 minutes, and then I have a 30-minute drive to work. So I caught the end of the first half on the drive on the radio, and then, but literally as I was leaving the house, I see Fabianski go down, and I'm just like, fuck.
Exactly.
Like, just like, I couldn't believe it. It's like, of course he gets injured right now. I mean, that's just, and you're thinking, wow, he's going to be out for months and months and months. Like, the worst is running through your head. Like, wow, this completely derails our season. What are we going to do? Do we need to bring in a free agent goalkeeper? Like, all that stuff is going through my head. And obviously, a free agent goalkeeper is not going to happen because we just signed two of them in the offseason. So, like, and you're not going to just cut Roberto, and you're not going to release David Martin either. So, it's the worst things are running through my head as that happens. And then I talk myself off the ledge. Like, okay, well, Roberto's played in he's played in La Liga. He's played all over the world. I'm trying to like hype myself up for this. Like, okay, he can do it. He's not that bad. And then I was like, oh yeah, we lost to Oxford by four fucking goals last week. Well, that's great. That's awesome. So I had to like talk myself down off the ledge. And anyway, and you're right. Anyone that is saying, the one thing I just don't get is like you make a little joke, just banter, like not like personally attacking someone. Like, people, like, if you're on Twitter and following us and you're criticizing us for not getting behind the players, you're preaching to the wrong fucking crowd, because we are literally like the most supportive people ever. And if you can't take a joke, please kindly just ignore what we have to say, because we joke about a lot of things. It's just a joke, so take a joke.
Yeah, well, see, the only reason I'm wound up is it was people that don't follow the podcast, which is okay. You don't have to like us. I'm not saying you got to like us. But one of the things is, you and I preach about starting Mark Noble every week, and Mark Noble's clearly not the best player. I mean, he's the heart, but he's not the best player. And
right,
we never slag off players. So I think a little crack at Roberto, and considering the way he's played, you're like, oh, God. Yeah, I didn't think it was that big of a deal, but you know, I feel like that's a lot of, and I don't want to offend, but I definitely want to offend. One of the things that cracks me up about we have a group chat, folks, and British people always say that Americans can't do banter, but I just think that they can't do banter, because one of the things is British people will crack a joke and say some really harsh stuff, and then you just got to take it. It's only banter. Then you say something back, and it's, oh my God, that's unacceptable. So I just wanted to put that out there, that all you British people who think you do banter, you don't.
I am torn on this because I'm half English, half American. So I understand both sides of banter. And that's what's funny when I go over there, is they always tell it, like, we can tell you're definitely half English. Even though you speak funny, I can tell you're half English by the way I can understand things and take jokes and have banter. And I will keep my feet in both camps here, and I will sit firmly on the fence. So back to you.
Anyway, so getting back to the game, Roberto comes in, and I'm a bit concerned.
Real quickly,
yeah.
Can I jump in here?
Absolutely.
I just want to express my thoughts again on how insane the Adrian situation has panned out. And I know it really doesn't tie into West Ham at all right now. It's really irrelevant. But just the fact that Adrian is starting in goal for Liverpool in Premier League, Champions League, and he sat out the cup game this week. Like, how mind-boggling that is, that I never thought that we would, like, desperately miss Adrian. But I 100% miss him right now. He's making all West Ham fans look a bit silly. Not all West Ham fans. Because I was really excited for him when he signed for Liverpool. And I was really excited for him to get that that moved to a massive, massive club, which I never thought was possible. Like, I never thought that he would go on to Liverpool. And how just mind-boggling it is that instead of playing for us, backing up West Ham, he's now starting for Liverpool. Granted, there's an injury to Alisson, but I saw a lot of people commenting on Twitter that, oh, Adrian, come back, come back, come back, come back. Well, it's like, you guys, you weren't saying that a month ago or 2 months ago. So it's just crazy how it's all worked out. That's all I wanted to say.
Well, that's the thing about backup goalkeepers, though, isn't it? Is you don't want to use them.
Right.
You don't want I mean, listen, as much as I liked Adrian, I didn't want to see Adrian in the goal because Fabianski's playing well. And if Adrian's in the goal, that means it's either a cup competition or Fabianski's injured. Same with Roberto. I'm sure he's a nice enough guy. I got no issue with him. Or David Martin. But I don't want to see him on the field. Fabianski has been incredible. And I'll even remember when we started this podcast, I was a little iffy on Fabianski because of his record at Swansea, not realizing how much he got peppered almost every game.
Yeah, that's true. I didn't think Fabianski was an upgrade on Adrian whenever we signed him. I really didn't think he was that big of an upgrade, and look how wrong that was. So
I'll happily be wrong.
Yeah, exactly. So Roberto came in, and what was that? That was, so Fabianski was in goal for the first goal. Can we talk about that first Bournemouth goal really quickly, too?
Yeah, go on.
It looked to me that he was offside in the buildup, but I didn't realize that. I think it was Callum Wilson that was offside, and the ball never came to him. But I thought he took runners with him. Like, I thought he took people away from the play, which was annoying to me that, like, oh, instead of playing the game itself, they were playing Callum Wilson, and Callum Wilson was offside, and that's why the flag went up, and then they over VAR. Do you think VAR got that one right?
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of clear as day, wasn't it? I think it's VAR is one of those things where it's really annoying when it works against you, and it's really great when it works for you. So I have a tough time commenting on it. I still think that, let's see, because I have it up here. I still think that the guy in the back affected the play that was offsides, but the goal scorer was not offsides. I think the ball in, I still think that affected the play. It affected the header. But, I mean, that's not here nor there. It's done now.
Right. So, yeah, VAR got it right. I just wish, like, it was annoying. Like, just linesman just needs to leave his flag down probably. And I know it's tough because, obviously, I think he saw the first man, which he thought Callum Wilson played the ball or affected the play probably. Mm-hmm. But maybe he did think on the pass over to Josh King that he was offside. I don't know. But anyway, VAR worked against us there. And, well, Pellegrini even said after the game the same thing. He's like, it's great if it works for you, but it's terrible if it works against you. So I'm going to stay neutral. So I just wanted to get your thoughts on that play.
Yeah, I mean, okay, so I just rewatched it one more time. I have it up on YouTube here. And when the player was in offside's position, it wasn't the guy who played it back to Callum Wilson. It was the guy who was back toward the back of the 6-yard box. And when they whip the ball into the mixer like that, he's in an offside's position, and players have to adjust and guard an offside guy. You know what I'm saying? So that's why I still think that he affected the play. But also, I'm biased. This is the West Ham Way USA podcast, not the Cherries Way podcast, so I'm sure that they probably think it was not affecting the play. But when it's whipped in like that, and the goalkeeper has to keep an eye on the offsides player, and the defenders have to keep an eye on the offsides player, it changes the play. So I still think that it was an offsides goal, but the actual goal itself was onside. Callum Wilson was onside. That's not. I don't disagree with that. I still think the guy in the back affected the play, and I would have called it off.
Just to clarify, Callum Wilson was the guy that was offside. It was
I have it mixed up here? Number 7?
Yeah, you did. It's okay. It was okay. I just wanted to make sure we clarified, so people were like, whoa, that was wrong. So I just wanted to make sure. So Callum Wilson was offside in the buildup, but the ball never came to him. Ake gets a fucking blind luck. It hits off his thigh and goes right to Josh King, and Josh King scores.
Okay, number 7 is Josh King.
Yes, correct. Well,
that's my fault, folks. Then I thought Callum Wilson was number 7. So that whole time I was talking about Wilson, I was definitely talking about Josh King, just to clarify.
Yep, just to clarify. And we go into end of the first half. It ended 1-1, where I'm thinking, like, okay, hopefully Roberto can hang on for a draw here. I wasn't thinking about us scoring any more goals. I was like, okay, I hope we don't lose this thing because of a goalkeeper error. And that's what my thoughts were at halftime.
Yeah, and we had some opportunities, especially Allaire's overhead kick in stoppage time to get it back to 2-1 just before half. Wow, I'm a little bit mixed up. Anderson's overhead kick, in the 46th minute to try and get it to halftime. We had plenty of opportunities in this game.
Yeah, we did. We really did. And the goal for Bournemouth came literally right at the kickoff of the second half, which is really frustrating.
27 seconds.
27 seconds into the second half.
Yeah.
It's just the back four falls asleep, and they catch him napping, and Callum Wilson just scores a peach of a goal. Roberto, people are criticizing Roberto on that goal. I don't think Fabianski makes that save. I think it's 2-1 regardless of who's in goal in that situation. What do you think?
I think Fabianski has more of a chance to make the save. Does he make the save? Maybe not. I have it up here. It's a nice finish into the bottom left corner. As any goalkeeper knows, the bottom ones are harder to save because you got to go down rather than jumping to push up. Yeah. I'd like to see Fabianski have better positioning. Like, I could see him doing better there. Maybe that's just my rosy eyes. I've seen Fabianski pull goals out of his hat. I'm not saying he would have saved that. Just Roberto, every goal that he allows, it just doesn't seem like he's ever in the right position. He's going to allow goals. He always seems out of position. It felt like all the Oxford goals were just a disaster. He didn't have defensive help during the Oxford game, but just every goal he seems like he's out of position. However, I will say that Callum Wilson was incredible. That one-on-one that saved the game. So he did save the game. I'll give him his credit. I really will.
He just looks like clumsy almost.
Yes.
Nothing he does looks fluid. Everything looks forced.
Yes.
And that's my thoughts with Roberto. Is I was a goalkeeper as well. So, I mean, very nowhere near the level of Roberto. But everything he does just looks like forced. And like Fabianski looks effortless, whereas Roberto looks 100% effort. Like he's trying his hardest to move around and make these saves. And like there was a shot that went over the bar, I think from Callum Wilson or someone, and Roberto just dove at it and looked like blindly dove at it, and it didn't look clean. Like it just looked scary. So I think that's part of the issue. Is Fabianski is going to make anyone look terrible, but Roberto just looks like he's old. He looks like he can't move very well, and everything that he does is just labored. So I think that's what a lot of people are worried about, and it's just not very clean. But you are right, though. Roberto made some key saves down the stretch, and that one-on-one you're referring to with Callum Wilson was a spectacular save. He could have came out and took him down for a penalty. He could have came out into no man's land and gotten chipped, but he stayed firm. He stood his ground, and Callum Wilson went for the nutmeg, I believe. He tried to go through his legs, and it went straight into his groin area. So it was a fantastic save on his part.
And then one more note before we get into the Cresswell goal here. I want to talk about how VAR, quote, saved us on that 3-1 goal. And yeah. I hate saying the phrase that VAR saved us because it was terrible refereeing and should have not needed saved to begin with. Well, I thought he was clear as day affecting the play, almost like the first one. This one was even more obvious.
Well, they were talking about it. Didn't the linesman chalk it off? I don't even think VAR chalked it off. I don't even think they looked at it. I think the referee came to their own conclusion that it was offside. I don't think it went to VAR. I think the referees on the field made the right decision in their defense.
Okay, well then.
I don't mean to throw you under the bus there, but I'm fairly confident in saying, and I could be wrong. If I am wrong, please correct me, any of the listeners at home. But the official and the linesman got together on the sideline.
They did talk about it. Yeah, I have
it. It reminded me of the Bobby Madley game.
You're right. I have it up here. They just they talked about it, and then he waved goal kick.
Yeah, he blew for offside, and then they got the correct decision. I actually thought the referee had a fantastic game, and I'm trying to think of which goal it was. I think it was it the second Bournemouth goal where he played advantage and yes, it led to a goal. So I thought the referee had an amazing game, and that's really a thing that never gets said ever. And from all the decisions that I saw, I think the referees got spot on, and credit to them for getting that one right on the field, not having to go to VAR. The linesman said, and I think it was, again, very, very much like the Bobby Madley game that we talk about constantly and away at Bournemouth. If the linesman says to the referee, if he's touched it, if I believe it was Solanke, if he's touched it, he's offside. And even if he doesn't touch it, he's still standing in his line of view. And I think he's offside. And I think that's what they were saying. It was he in the line of view and did he touch it? And they came to the conclusion that, yes, he was interfering with the play. And I think he even did get a touch on it. So they came to the right conclusion that he was offside. Correct decision. And then well done, the referee.
Yeah, these morning podcasts got me all mixed up. Just calling VAR when it was the referees and calling Joshua King, Callum Wilson. I'm a little messy this morning, but we're going to get it together. What I do want to talk about, though, is Anderson for a second. So in the before Cresswell's goal, Anderson almost had the same exact play where it was lofted over to the top toward the back post, and Anderson nodded it toward the goalkeeper and forced the goalkeeper to make a good save. Uh-huh. But then looking at Cresswell's goal, the exact identical play. It was the exact identical play. Over the top, Anderson nods it down. Instead, toward the goalkeeper as a shot, he nods it down to Cresswell, and Cresswell just hits an absolute bomb into the back of the net. I mean, that would have took off somebody's leg.
And the cross from Yarmolenko both times. I mean, how good was Yarmolenko? I thought this was his best game in a West Ham shirt by a country mile.
I agree.
He was dishing it left, right, and center. His diagonals that he was playing were incredible. He's doing little step-overs and bringing other guys into the game, whereas he wasn't before. And really quickly, I don't mean to go back to the last goal, but it's amazing to me that he's so good that you know what's coming. You know he's going to cut in and try to curl it with his left foot. You know that's coming, mm-hmm. and you can't stop it. Ake got rolled over, and it was amazing. So I wanted to give credit to Yarmolenko as well. And go back to the Cresswell goal, Anderson. People saying Anderson had a shit game. I don't know what these people want from him.
Who said that?
I saw a lot of people saying it on Twitter that he was crap.
Oh, is that people were saying, why is Anderson? I put Anderson in my top three for man of the match. I thought he had a fantastic game. His nod downs, his runs. I thought he played very well.
His poor games are worthy of man of the match performances. And it takes, in someone of his quality, he can have a crap game and have a assist and set up another goal. So I am just really annoyed that people are like, oh, Anderson's mediocre, he's terrible, he's not that good, he's not worth £45 million. I saw that on Twitter multiple times.
What?
And I think all the credit to him, it's a great assist to head it back down for Cresswell. Yeah, sure, Cresswell gets a little lucky. I think if it doesn't take a deflection, the goalkeeper is right there to make that save. It would have been a tough save, but I think he pushes it wide, and he gets a little lucky with the deflection. It goes in 2-2, and it sounded like the away end was really, really going nuts. I love the audio, hearing the fans whenever that Cresswell goal went in. It sounded like it was really good scenes.
And the same idiots that'll say Anderson's not worth $40 million are the same idiots that'll get mad for taking a quick joke at Roberto. Just putting that out there.
Yeah, so 2-2. Was there anything to talk about after that second goal?
No, I just want to say that I thought that I do want to give Roberto his due. He did make some key saves down the stretch, even though he did look really finicky on that one rocket shot. I'm not saying Fabianski would have caught it, but he definitely made that rocket shot right at him look really nervy. Do you remember that one?
Highlights. He crossed his hands almost. Like
crossed iron saved it there. Crossed hammer saved it there. I was like, oh, God.
In his defense,
I would have probably broke his hand.
It was a knuckle. It was a ball probably shot at least 90 miles an hour, and it's knuckling in the air. So I think in his defense, again, Fabianski probably makes that save effortlessly, but I think that's just because he makes it look that easy. I think Roberto did well. It was nerve-wracking, but I think he did well to make the save there.
Listen, he saved it and the ball wasn't in the net, so I'll give him his credit. It just made me very nervous.
His Roberto's distribution is less than ideal, though. And you could tell the Bournemouth fans were picking up on it because every single time he got the ball, he was like, whoa, just trying to get in his head. And fair play to them. That's what you should do. Try to get under the opposing player's skin. I think he did fine. But yeah, his goal kicks and his distribution was horrendous, quite honestly. It was not good. But I don't need your distribution to be good. Just please stop the shots and give us a chance to win the game. Which, in his defense, Roberto did give us a chance to win the game. And without him, if someone else goes in net, potentially like David Martin or something, I don't know because we haven't seen him. But
we haven't even seen him.
We haven't. No, you're right. But I'm just saying that some of the saves he had to make were quite difficult. So, another goalkeeper on his day could probably let that go by him. So I'm okay with the way Roberto performed. I'm not going to get on his back or anything. I'm just going to get behind him. And hopefully the only game Fabianski misses is the Palace game. And so you get to see Roberto next week. You're going over there, aren't you?
The 1 week that I go over, I think it's fate. The 1 week that I'm over there, Fabianski's going to be injured. So we'll see how it plays out. I mean, it's going to be at home, and I don't want to jinx it, but Palace doesn't concern me. I really can't stand Palace, so we'll see how that turns out. But yeah, I'll be there.
A lot of pressure for Roberto on Sky or whatever. I don't know what the late game is usually on, but it's the prime time game, so to speak, under the lights. So
12:30 for us, 5:30 for UK.
Yeah, I'm actually off work next Saturday, so I'll get to go to the pub to watch it. So we'll have good content for everyone. Hopefully, when you're over there, we'll get a good time to record. I know it's really tough when you're over there usually, but hopefully we'll be able to get that. Luckily for us, I don't know what you're doing after the game Saturday night, but I should be able to record straight after if that's something you want to do. Or we can do it on Sunday after all the NFL. Up to you.
Yeah, we'll figure it out later because I might be out drinking. Our buddy Nick, friend of the pod, is going to be over there with his brother. Nick was actually in, I want to say, Serbia, watching a game this week. And so check out N Stampar on Twitter. It was a really cool video. He was actually like around where the flares were and stuff in those Eastern European country games. So that was crazy. Other than that, real quickly,
Nick is a part of the West Ham Way USA team. YouTube side of things. So yep. Jeremiah Carson at J Carson. I don't know the year. I don't have it pulled up in front of me, but Jeremiah Carson on Twitter and Scott Davis on Twitter. They are doing YouTube content for the brand, the West Ham Way USA, and they are very much in our family. So if you are on YouTube, please go find them, and they can. They do some really good videos. Their Three Men in a Box is really cool. So I just wanted to make sure we shouted them out.
Absolutely. So I guess the last part of the game is, let's just talk about the final score, 2-2. Your final thoughts, are you happy with the draw? Would you take in a draw beforehand? 2-2 also puts us fourth in the league.
We are
going to my FotMob app.
Yeah, great podcasting here. We were third. We were definitely third, and yep, now we are still third.
Great. So
we are still third. Wow.
Liverpool, Man City, West Ham United. So we are third, depending on whatever happens in Leicester versus Newcastle today.
Come on, Newcastle.
Exactly. And then the other thing I wanted to point out, I guess for the interesting portion, is us and Liverpool are the only teams unbeaten in five. So yeah, that's great company to be in.
In the league. Because we did lose. Yeah. We got our asses absolutely smashed by Oxford.
We definitely just ignored that entire moment. But yes, we did. Other than that, anything else on the game? Are you happy with the result?
Yeah, I'm happy with it. Pellegrini's post-game press conference, he also said that he would have taken the draw considering the situation. Bournemouth, as we know, is never an easy place to go, ever. We usually lose there. I saw someone, I can't remember, I think it was John Black in our little group chat. He said that he's going for a 0-0. I was like, John, you are going against every single bit of common sense in your brain right now. You know very well that Bournemouth at home always score goals, and we usually concede goals. So I can't remember what I predicted on our show. Do you remember your prediction?
No, but the average goals for this fixture in the last like four were 6.27 or something like that.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Something stupid. So that sounds about right. So that 0-0 would go against everything that has any logic to it in this fixture. But I think I said 3-2 probably, so I wasn't too far off. I was just a one West Ham goal away from the win. So the game was as I expected, honestly.
I always say 2-1, so that's probably what my prediction was. However, our fixtures coming up, again, I said this last week after the United game, and I felt this way about Bournemouth, are very favorable, and we are sitting third. I don't want to get over the moon here, but our next game is Palace home, Everton away, Sheffield home, Newcastle home, Burnley away. So we really should be able to pick up some points here.
You know what's crazy?
Keep going.
Is I am not scared, and this probably sounds like really big talk coming from a West Ham fan. So I want people to take this with a grain of salt, but I am not scared to play anyone in the Premier League apart from Liverpool and Man City. And I think we can beat anyone outside of the top two on their day right now. I'm not saying we will. I'm not saying we'll beat them. I probably when we play Spurs, obviously that'll be a tough game, but we have a great history against Tottenham. Manchester United don't scare me. Clearly, we beat them. We spanked their butts, quite honestly. And Arsenal, not the same. Chelsea, not the same. So that I am just confident in our ability to play Premier League football right now. And if we are hovering around that 3-6 come like Christmas time, there's a long way to get there. There is such a long way to get there. I am not getting ahead of myself. I'm not saying we're going to qualify for the Champions League or Europa League, but I'm just saying with the way the league is set up right now, we have every chance to be fighting for top five, top six, maybe even top four. And again, I'm getting ahead of myself, but the way the league's set up this year, I like our chances, man. I think we look really good, and I think Leicester look really good, and I think we're going to be duking it out for that best of the rest and potentially even finishing above Manchester United or Chelsea maybe, or Arsenal. I don't know.
All these people who are saying don't get ahead of yourselves, because I agree, I'm on team don't get ahead of yourself as well. But I do want to say I would rather be sitting here on 12 points in third than 4 points in 17th. You know, so just enjoy the ride a little bit. You know what I'm saying?
People
don't want to enjoy this. Try to enjoy it. If they let us down later, which most likely
they probably will.
Then let that happen. But in the meantime, enjoy the ride. We're getting results. We haven't seen a West Ham loss in the league in like 5 or 6 matches. Since we only have one. It's the City game. They fought back through all the adversity, going Fabianski injury, going down to 10 men against Villa. And then they obviously took care of Norwich and Watford, came back against Brighton. No, they blew it against Brighton, but because I was at that game. But still, you know, we've gotten results, and it's fun. This podcasting stuff is so much more fun when we're getting results as well. I feel like I have more energy. I feel like I have more voice inflection. I feel like we're more entertaining. There's more Twitter content. You know, this is fun. I don't want to sit here and whine. So try to enjoy it. And get behind the players.
By the time that our listeners listen to this, depending on, as we already said, the Leicester and Newcastle result, that league spot could change to fourth. So I just want you guys to keep in mind, we're recording this before, we're early in the day. So Leicester hopefully will have already lost by then, and we will be still sitting third come match week 8. So I'm just ecstatic with where we are right now. And we've been here before. That last season at the Bolin, weren't we in fourth at Christmas?
Yep.
I think we were in a Champions League spot at Christmas, which was mind-blowing. So we've been here before. I don't want to get ahead of myself, but I am very, very, very positive about the way we're playing right now. The League Cup loss sucks. It's never fun to get your butt spanked by a League One side. But hopefully we take the FA Cup serious and we go for that one, because the first thing I said when we lost to Oxford was like, if you can't laugh at yourself, who can you laugh at? And I was just laughing at us. Thank God I couldn't watch that piece of crap game, because I would have been fuming. I would have been absolutely fuming. I wasn't even mad that there wasn't a stream. I really wasn't. I was okay with it, and it wasn't selected for TV. So, and then the EFL has those weird rules, I guess. I don't know what they are.
Everything about the EFL sucks.
Yeah. So
I like watching the Championship in League One, League Two, but the EFL as a whole, like as an organization, a bunch of dickheads.
Yeah, so I think we're going to take a quick break here, yep. and we'll jump back in with some Twitter Q&A.
Absolutely.
All right, it's Twitter question time, and we're going to get into the first question from my friend Dave Sperry, whose shoulder is recovering nicely from his fall in Vegas. Shout out Dave Sperry. He says, now that we are currently top four, what is the highest you've ever seen West Ham in the table?
Highest I've ever seen West Ham in the table was third a week ago. Yeah, this week right
third
now.
Third right now.
Third right yeah, now. Because I've only been watching for, what, I said, I think it's about 8 or 9 years, maybe 10 now, and mm-hmm. I've never got to see where they when they actually finished third that 1 year, back in, was that the 80s?
Yeah, something like that. I so was not around
then. I was not around then. I was born in 93. The other time I can think of is fourth at Christmas.
Yeah.
And I think the highest ever finish watching West Ham that I've seen was, what, seventh?
Seventh,
other than finishing third in the championship.
Right, exactly.
I can't think of any other time. The playoff final was incredible, but no, this is the highest I've ever seen West Ham be.
I definitely agree with that. The only other comparable season was that last season at the Bolin, where we were pushing for Champions League come Christmas time. And it is crazy that had we just picked up a few more points at the end of that season, we would have finished in the Champions League. But it wasn't to be. And we still finished in Europa League, and then we lost to Astra. Yeah.
Astra Gugu.
Yeah.
Hold on one second, because I'm bringing that up here. That was 15-16 or 14-15?
That was 15-16 season. It was the last season of the Bolin.
Yes. Okay. So, because I remember this. Oh, I got to talk into the mic. I remember this vividly because going back, if we would have beat Swansea on
The Swansea game was the big one.
I mean, before that, we won three. We beat Sunderland, Tottenham, and Everton. Those are the three games I was at. Everton away. Best day of my life. I always have to say it every pod. It's like given. And then we went on that four draws in a row run where we got cheated at Chelsea and the weird Palace game. And then Leicester was weird as well. And the 3-3 against Arsenal. We beat Watford and West Brom. And so that was what? And then it was, so 4, 6, 10, 11 games unbeaten going into that Swansea game.
Yeah.
And we got smashed 4-1 at home, which was the last Saturday game at the Bolin.
Yeah, didn't we lose to like Stoke right after that too or something?
We beat Manchester United at the last ever game at the Bolin, which was incredible. And then to go, because I'm looking at it, if we would have gotten three. If we would have received 3 points, we would be sitting on 65 and right into the Europa League group stage and skipping Southampton.
Yeah.
So if we would have beat Stoke on final day, we would have been right into the group stage, would have got to skip Astra Gugu and whatever. I think we played two games that year or whatever. I don't remember exactly, but yeah.
Right.
Incredible. Next question.
It's from Paul Buck at Hatter01. Do you think Haller is not getting the credit he deserves for being such a strong hold-up player now that the goals have dried up a bit? So can I start with this one?
Absolutely.
We talked about it already earlier, so I don't think we need to go too far in depth with this, but I do not think he's getting the credit he deserves. From West Ham fans, I think there are a fair amount of us that are still praising him and pleased with what he's doing. But I think as an outsider, as a Premier League neutral fan looks at it, they're probably like, oh, well, Haller's really slowed down here. He's not looking that good. Whereas I'm looking at it like, holy crap, he looks amazing.
Yeah, those are the FIFA players that are saying that, oh, if he doesn't score goals, he's crap.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what FIFA and Football Manager people do, you know. I mean, as much as I love FIFA and Football Manager, that's what it is. If you're not scoring goals, you're crap, according to people.
Yeah.
But his hold-up play has been tremendous, and I really thank Allaire for what he's doing, and he's been incredible. The next question is from Not Ryan, and that is Amish Goat. What is that?
Amish Goat Farm.
Okay. What player is the best form at the moment, and why is it Yarmo's left foot?
So the player who's most in form is definitely Yarmolenko's left foot, 100%. And he just doesn't have that much of a right foot, which is funny. But because people still like I was saying earlier, Ake got rolled over by Yarmolenko. Like, he thought he was going to continue on with his left foot, or his right foot, excuse me, and obviously that's not going to happen. He's going to try to cut back and curl it in with his left, which is exactly what he did. So I do think the most informed player right now is Yarmolenko. I think Allaire's right up there, even though he's not scoring again. His form is consistent every single week where he's holding it up and dishing it off. And then Anderson, he hasn't been his best, but he's still providing. So I think those three guys are right up there.
My most informed player, Aaron Cresswell. I think he's had, inform as in two games now. He's because he hasn't played any other games. He has been tremendous to this team. He came off the bench after losing his spot to Masuaku and came in and has been an absolute stud the last two games. Massive result against Manchester United. Great defending, scored the free kick. And here he was again in the attack, defended well. It wasn't him who got toasted on any of these goals. So I thought Aaron Cresswell has also had a very, very good game, although we allowed two goals.
Yeah, I agree with that. The next question we have here is from American Hammer, at Not Merrick. What's the weak point in our starting 11 right now? Obviously, losing Fabianski makes us easier. But other than that, who is the weakest? What is the weakest spot in the starting 11 right now?
Ugh. Well, the weakest spot in the starting 11 is obviously going to be Roberto. That's a non-question. So I guess if I could try to think outside the box, the other weakest point would be Fornals and Lanzini competition, in my opinion.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
Damn. I was trying to get clever and try to think of something somebody else wasn't thinking of. Okay, I think that's the weakest part because I think Fornals hasn't been poor. I think he's going to need time to adjust. I think I try to point everybody back to those days when Anderson was horrible. I mean, his first four games or five games at West Ham was terrible, like that Southampton game. There's games where he just got muscled off the ball. He got beat up every play because he wasn't used to the Premier League. And preseason's not the Premier League, so Fornals doing well in the preseason is not playing against Villa on a Monday night in the rain.
Yeah, right.
So, or whatever games he's been playing. So you got to give him time and not get on his back. But the thing about it is he needs to adjust his game, and then that's why I say Lanzini needs to come back in when he's completely fit because he's been playing in the Premier League for West Ham now, what, 5 years?
Four or five years.
So he gets it, and he can mentor. He can mentor Fornals. Right. They're same style player in my opinion. They have the same qualities, the same ideas, the same turns. So that could be a mentorship that gets going there.
Yeah, I still think the left back position is the weak spot. Also, so if I'm not going to choose that Fornals and Lanzini, although Cresswell has played well this past two games, I still think the left back needs to be improved. And if he can do this more often, I'll get more excited about it. And hopefully Masuaku, if he has to play, can come in and play really well. But I think if you're looking at the 11, if I had to pick a position where we're the weakest at, it's left back still. So I also want to give a shout out to Ryan Fredericks, who played amazing these past couple of games too, who's been really, really good. So that's kind of my thoughts. The next question we have here is from James L. at Iowa Iron, and he said the West Ham Reddit was discussing a song for Yarmolenko, and Yamo Be There by James Ingram was suggested as a song to get going for Yarmolenko, which, for those that don't know, go listen to it. I had never heard of it before he just suggested it. But
you're going
to
hear it at the beginning of our podcast today.
Oh, okay, so shout out to James for giving us the song to put at the beginning of the podcast, so that works for me. Do you have any song ideas for Yarmolenko?
Nope. Song of the week goes to James L. Iowa Iron for that recommendation there. No, I don't have any songs for Yarmolenko. I'm not creative.
Well, we did hear the Yaya Toure song for Yarmolenko. I don't think it's very creative. Some people hate that song. I know one of the Liams in our group chat hates that song. I just think it's just probably because it's not very creative, and it's just any player with four syllables in their name you can do it for.
I think it's fun. It's not creative or clever, but I think it's fun.
Yeah, it is fun. But you want to go on to the next one?
Yeah, Adam Smith and Green Street Hammer, shout out. With the Carabao Cup run over, how can West Ham get Yeti more minutes so the Hammers can actually see where he is? Let's see what he is. What are your thoughts on a Yeti? Do you think that... Well, he's mad young, isn't he?
He's pretty young.
He's got to be in his 20s as well. Like, early 20s, like 20, 21.
Yeah, I just don't think he fits in with what we're trying to do with that 4-1-4-1. And you're not... I don't think you bring Allaire off unless he's gassed or has an injury, so... And I don't see, because the hold up play is too good. And even at the end of the games, if you're holding a lead, Allaire's the one you want out there, not a Yeti. So, and there are people who are already writing off a Yeti because he started in that 4-0 defeat, and they're saying, "Wow, I saw someone prominent. I can't remember who it was on Twitter saying he's absolutely shit. I know he's only played in two games, but he reminds them of Jonathan Cagliari, whatever his name was." So. I think that's harsh on him. He's only played two games, so hopefully he can be a little bit better here in the future. But I don't see him getting any minutes anywhere apart from the cups.
Well, here's the thing with the hold up play. Sebastian Allaire has 3 more inches on a Yeti. So Sebastian Allaire is 6'3", 6 feet 3 inches, and a Yeti is 6'0". So I think that the interesting thing there is, you're right, exactly. He's not that type of player. So when you bring him in, you're going to have to change the formation and probably go 2 strikers, or you're going to have a situation with Hernandez when you're playing a striker that doesn't fit the formation. However, I'm not ready to write him off. Everybody wants to get on the Roberto train, but I'm not ready to write off a Yeti. I mean, he had... not really many opportunities either. So I guess I should bring that same energy when I talk about a Yeti to Roberto. But the thing about a Yeti is he's 20. No, excuse me, he's 22. He needs to get into this game. He has to have time, you know. It's like Fornals. Fornals is what, 23, 24?
Yeah, something like that.
So we're going to need to
speed this up a little bit because we got about 8 minutes. So let's quickly. Scott Davis at Denver West Ham. We are currently in third. Conceivably, we might be fifth by the end of the weekend. Are you getting nosebleeds from being up this high in the table? Yes, I'm getting nosebleeds. Lots of nosebleeds. It's exciting.
The next question. Yeah, I'm excited for it. The next question is West Ham United at TJ Cowboy Hammer from Norfolk, England. So I'm trying to figure out how you got that name, TJ.
Norfolk.
What do you think it says about the team mentality that after an embarrassing defeat to Oxford, we managed to get a good result away to a very capable Bournemouth team? Is this some sort of determination that can push into the next level this year? P.S. Great pod, listen every week. Can I go first here?
Go.
This is a great analysis. This is a great tweet. This is a fantastic tweet because we did get a result and we were embarrassed on Wednesday. And this team dug deep, and
Bournemouth too.
Yeah,
Bournemouth. So it's even a tougher game.
Yeah, well, Bournemouth were right there up high in the table as well. So, yeah. So this is a top 8 matchup before today. So I'm really proud of the result that we got, and the team did fight back. And how many West Ham teams have we seen get a bad result in the cup, and then it just carries over to the league all the time?
Yeah, it's like every year.
Yeah, so that's yeah, just so all the time.
Thank you for the compliment, by the way, TJ Cowboy Hammer. I appreciate you listening every week, and we would love for you to interact with us every week. That's great. I agree. I agree that it shows a lot about our character, and I think really in the Oxford game, what you missed was obviously Fabianski, and then you missed Rice and Noble more than anything else. I think if you put Rice and Noble in that game, we have a very strong chance of beating Oxford, in my opinion. I didn't watch it, but I don't want to go back to that. So
that's a good shout,
the next question is at Selly, or it's from Selly at Pierre_Selly. If we were still located in the Bolin ground, do you think we would have still been able to sign Allaire and Anderson?
Oh, this will be interesting. And our friend from More Than Just a Podcast, Nigel, would have an interesting take on this. I think that we got these players because we have changed stadiums and changed mentalities. However, there's a lot of listeners, and again, my good friend Nigel, who would definitely agree, would disagree and say that nothing has changed. That, I mean, I shouldn't speak for him, but I think it's a big club mentality moving to the bigger stadium. I think it's a world-class stadium. I wouldn't say it's better than the Bolin, because I liked that the old smell and the small ground and being on top of the pitch. But this is a world-class stadium. So it's whatever you like. If you like that old feel, and it reminds me of Hershey Park Arena in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. I won't go on long because we are running short on time. But there's an old arena that still has wooden seats and still has metal, and it just smells like old beer and popcorn. And I love that. But we also have a brand new arena called the Giant Center where the hockey team plays now, and it's a beautiful world-class arena.
I don't think that Allaire and Anderson came because of the stadium. I really don't think that. I think the difference is, would we have the money to spend had we not moved the stadium? That's the question, in my opinion, because I don't think players go to play at a stadium. I really don't. I think – go ahead.
Well, I wouldn't argue that it was just the stadium or just the money. I think it's just the whole mentality in general. I think the mentality has changed since moving.
I don't know. The thing is like, would the owners have spent that money if we were at the Bolin? That's the question in my head, and I don't know the answer to that.
Because I don't know the numbers. It wasn't Champions League or Europa League. I mean, look at Burnley, look at Wolves. They haven't really done anything, and they were in Europa League. So it wasn't the Europa League out at the final season of the Bolin. I genuinely do think it was the stadium. Maybe I'm brainwashed from the board, which anyone who listens to the pod knows we're not like board lickers, but I'm not like anti-board. I think the stadium changed the whole mentality of the club. And
if we were at the Bolin, you don't think Allaire and Anderson would have come? Is that what you're saying?
That is exactly what I'm saying.
Yeah, I think if the money was there, they still would have come. Because I don't think the stadium and the mentality influences. I think the mentality maybe, like an exciting project, maybe I can see that. But I think if we would have paid the fees and the same wages, if everything was the same, they still would have come.
Yeah. Well, I think we should spend more time on that next week. I think we should have a discussion about that and bring some points. I think we have time for one more question here. So sorry if we missed anybody. I wanted to read out CJ, and that's Chico Grande West Ham.
CG. Yep.
Yep, CG. It says, if Real Madrid came in with an 80 to 85 million bid for Felipe Anderson after what looks like to be another disappointing season for them, which I'm assuming he's talking about Real Madrid, what should we do? 80 to 85 million for Anderson, do you take it?
Oh, God, that's so tough.
Yes.
It's not my money, so I'm not the owner, so in my opinion, I wouldn't want to sell. So if it's me making the decision right now, seeing as I don't get to see a single penny of that money, I don't sell him. But I can see why the owners would be tempted to take that, and hopefully they would reinvest that money wisely. But that's a scary thought, losing one of our best players and then potentially having to replace him. So I say no, I do not sell him.
To me, it's the same conversation about Rice and any of our good players that would go for anywhere 50-plus is – if the board was to reinvest the money and get multiple players that can do the job, and I trust Huselius with his scouting, and Pellegrini seems to bring in some fairly good guys as well, then yes, I would take that money. But at the same time, we've known our board, and it seems from afar that they've been kind of tight, or they just come off as tight, and I don't really see it being reinvested, so... if it was to be reinvested, yes, I take the money. If it is not reinvested, no, we keep Anderson. Simple as.
Okay. And yep. I just want to really quickly answer the last question.
Go ahead.
Mick Mooney at Mickamoo WHUFC. Do you think Fornals is improving? Yes, I do think he's improving. I think he will get better at the end of the season. Just give him a little bit of time.
Yeah, I agree. So, I think he needs a little more time.
Real quickly, let's do a Palace preview. I know we are coming into good form. Palace won this week, so just give me a quick score prediction and what we think.
Well, like
you're going to be there.
Yes,
you're
going to
be there.
I will be there. Nick and I and his brother are going to the West Ham Way event. Going to get to see Matty Jarvis, so that's going to be pretty cool.
Yeah, Matt Jarvis. I should send you my Matt Jarvis shirt to get signed. I should have thought about that before now.
Yeah, it's a little.
When do you leave?
I leave on Thursday midday. So if you can get
I'm gonna see if I can get it to you in time.
Well, what's the worst that happens? It just sits in my house and I send it back to you.
True.
Okay. So anyway, I will be at the match going to the West Ham Wave event with Matty Jarvis, and then I am going to try and kick it down to Plastow to have a pint in one of the old pubs there. I forget what it was called, and then we have a 12:30 Eastern USA, 5:30 British kickoff. So. my score prediction is going to be 3-0 to West Ham. I think we get back on the... Yeah, I'm going optimistic. I think we get back into it. I really do. I think that we played pretty well against Bournemouth. I thought we were a disaster against Oxford, and I think we keep this run going. I really don't think Palace is a good team, and I just can't stand them. So I will go 3-0.
Awesome. I will be at the Amsterdam Tavern in St. Louis, so if you are in St. Louis, come say hi to me. I'll be there, and I'm going for a 2-1 West Ham victory, and I think we keep this thing rolling. So I'm optimistic, and I think that'll do it for this week. Tony, you have anything to add?
Nope. Take us out with all the stuff that I mess up.
Follow us on Twitter at... Oh, I almost
West
said
Ham,
the old podcast.
West Ham West Way Ham, US Pod. West Ham Way US Pod. Even I got it right this time. You pulled a Tony.
Yep, I almost just pulled the old one. We are on Facebook now, so go like the Facebook page if you find us at West Ham Way USA Pod, podcast. Sorry. And I think that's about it for the week, Tony. I don't know if we have go give us a 5-star review. 5-star review on iTunes, please, please, please. That's the last thing I wanted to say. Please leave us a nice review. We want to get as high in the charts as possible and get as many ears as possible. But
yeah, and then I guess one last thing is I wanted to say is we love when everybody interacts with us on Twitter. So even say hi, even if it's something negative. Negative, put it in the DM. But we love when we're getting Twitter notifications. It's almost like an extra motivation to keep going. So right. I really enjoy it. Even if it's negative, you probably get me being sassy, but I just interactions on Twitter, that knowing that people care is one of the coolest things, whether it's positive or negative. So I just wanted to say I appreciate this week. We had a lot of Twitter interactions, positive and negative, and it really kept us going and made me excited to do that podcast this morning.
Agreed. So signing off from St. Louis, Missouri, I'm Brawley Darbin. Signing off in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, Tony Clark. We will see you guys next week. And you have one more thing to add?
No, I was just waving goodbye. Come on, you Irons.
Yeah, people could see you waving, so that's cool.
Great podcast. Bye.